What's up, Dream Warriors? Welcome back to another episode of a podcast on Elm Street. I am Mark.
And I am Brooke.
And this week is a little bit different. Normally we break down movies, as you all know. But this week we're going to be talking to an actor. So this week we are joined by Jimmy Dempster. How are you, Jimmy?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. Doing good.
Thanks for coming on.
Hey, you're welcome, man. Thanks for coming on.
This has been something that's in the works for a while now. We're hoping to get you on back in November, and then just shit started happening. Schedules weren't flying, but we finally got you on.
Yeah, no, it's cool, man. Like I said, it's kind of been that way. Everybody's kind of dealing with, you know, last year was insane. I mean, we had conventions lined up. We had film festivals. We had a bunch of podcasts and stuff like that. Some of them, we're actually going to come to the conventions and do live things, but obviously last year kind of hit everybody in the ass. So, you know, I know all about that, brother. I mean, having to reschedule everything has just been insane. Movies too. There's been some projects that have gotten postponed. So, but I mean, we're here now, man. I'm just glad that we're actually finally able to put it together.
Definitely.
Yeah, me too.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, some projects that you've done or that you're possibly currently working on or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we moved to Florida in 2009, and I had no aspirations or anything about acting. It was just, you know, I was doing the massage therapy gig. My wife was an occupational therapist, raising the kids in Florida, and then all of a sudden my buddy tells me about this Rockabilly Zombie Weekend thing that's going on in Orlando. And I was like, what the hell is that? And it sounded like a convention or something, right? Like a rock festival or something like that. So I was like, yeah, well, that's cool. What's that? He's like, oh no, they're shooting a movie. They're casting a zombie film. I'm like, oh, perfect. And you know, I'm an old school Romero guy. You know, I dig the classic zombie stuff. So I was like, hey, throw some rock in there. I'm good to go. So for the hell of it, I went down to check it out, and I figured, yeah, I could be like a zombie or something, you know, if they're just looking for extras. And, the casting director and the producers were all there, and they said, oh, you have to go into this room, and they handed me like 2-3 pages of sides, which at the time I had no idea what the hell that even was. Like, sides, what is this? It's like, oh yeah, just read these lines and, you know, memorize them, and then you come in and then you'll read it for the director, and then we'll cast you. And I had no fucking idea what I was doing. I was like, all right, I guess, you know, I just thought I was here to kind of, you know, be a zombie or whatever. But I went in and I did reads very cold, had no experience. Read for, looking back, I'm sure probably worst auditions anybody's ever done ever for anything. So I went in, did the read they had me read for like 3 characters. It was crazy. And they said, oh, you know, thank you very much. And, you know, we'll call. And I went home and I didn't hear anything. And about a week or so after that, I got a phone call from casting, and they said, hey, you know, we liked you. Would you like to come in and, you know, work on the project for a while? We can use you. Maybe we'll feature you or something like that. I said, yeah, cool. So it was supposed to be like a couple of days work. It ended up being like 2-3, oh God, almost a month I worked on that project. I got hooked. I got the bite big time. I got bit. I was like, this is where I need to. And I just dove into it from there. That was it. I was just like, this is what I want to do now.
That's crazy. So, like, you're still pretty, like, fairly fresh into it then. Like, 2009, it's like 12 years ago, roughly.
Well, I mean, I started this probably about 2012. Okay. I mean, we moved to Orlando in 2009, and then I found out about the project around 2012, 2013. So I think it was like the summer of 2012, somewhere around there. Shit. And I was just like, man, this is cool. And then I got, like I said, I got the bug, and then I just found out about Full Sail University and all the stuff that they had going on out there. At the time, they were really doing some really cool projects out in Florida. And I kind of just tried to get involved in everything I could.
Yeah, and you've been in some pretty cool shit, too.
Nice.
Like, you've been on, like, The Walking Dead and fucking The Originals. the Fate of the Furious. I think you were on that too.
Yeah, that was actually the first gig I did when we come to Georgia. Yeah? Yeah, we made the move in 2016, and that was the first gig I ended up getting. And it was cool because the freaking soundstage where they shot the show, where they shot the movie, was right across the street from my house.
No way.
Oh, really?
So that was perfect. Yeah, it's like, oh, you think you're gonna have be able to get to you're gonna be able to get the set? You know, we're gonna have a problem. Yeah, I think I'll be able to get there. Unless I get really fucked up the night before, and I don't have to worry about Uber or anything. I just stumble my way over.
Send the limo.
You were in a short. The Punisher. Are you like into Marvel, like comic books at all, or is that kind of something you just kind of stumbled upon?
I've always been into the, I guess you call them the anti-heroes. I've never really been into like the superhero kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've always liked Punisher to me was a little bit more grounded in reality. It kind of had that Death Wish kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was, it felt a little bit more, it wasn't as fantastic as like Spider-Man or, I mean, I dig stuff like that. I've seen pretty much all the movies. Batman, Superman. I like all that stuff. But again, Batman, he's a little slightly more grounded in reality. The Punisher character, I've always dug. It's like, you know, vigilante vendetta, you know, vigilante justice. I mean, who can't relate to that? Everybody can relate to that. I think if they've known somebody that's been taken out, or they could just, you know, load up on weapons and just go nuts. So I've always dug the Punisher character. And when my buddy Lee brought that to my attention, he said, yeah, I'm going to do this short. You know, you want to do this kind of thing where I'm like, I don't know, I'd have to cut my hair. He's like, no, we're going to do this story where, you know, you wake up out of a coma and, you know, the world's overrun by us. Okay, so we're essentially taking the Punisher and we're mixing it with, like, zombies. I says, I'm sold. I'm in, man. I was like, hey, you got Punisher and you got zombies. I'm in. And we did it for no budget. It was just a fun thing we did on the weekend out in Florida. We shot that. It was just after he got out of he just got out of Full Sail at the time, Full Sail University. And it was just something that he come up with and we put together. And it was cool. It was a neat little thing. We did like a little cinematic trailer.
Nice. Yeah, it does sound like a good time. Like just, you know, chill, lay back, just kind of have fun, right?
Yeah, those are the best of times. Those are the best kind of projects, and a lot of times they're like that. Being on set, you meet really cool people. Everybody's just as crazy as you are. Everybody gets it, you know. Everybody's working on no sleep, and yeah, those are the. It's fun. It's a good time.
That's awesome. You've done some roles in some horror movies and shows and stuff like that. And you mentioned earlier too that you're a Romero fan, an old school Romero fan. Are you full blown into horror? Like you're a horror lover, yeah. Or is it just like kind of the zombie genre that you're in?
Oh yeah. No, it's the genre altogether. I mean, I go down every which, that's one of the cool things about horror, right? Is there's all different, you know, routes you could take. You can do the extreme. You can do, there's Asian, there's Tokyo Shock, there's zombie, there's all different genres. Psychological horror. Like I'm a huge Ari Aster fan.
Yeah.
I think the stuff he's doing now is extremely refreshing. You know, Hereditary and Midsommar, all that stuff. I love stuff like that. But growing up as a kid in the 80s, man, like I've always said, we just had the mom and pop video stores. We just had access to all that really cool stuff as a kid. You walk in and on a Friday night and, you know, you get your friends over for a sleepover and you get your munchies and shit like that. And you rent the craziest looking video you could find. On the wall. Nowadays, it's like going through the Netflix queue and you look for the craziest poster you see on there because there's just so much content now. But back in the day, you're walking up and down the aisles in the video store and you're like, what's this? Evil Dead? Oh, okay. I have to watch this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hand coming out of the ground, I was sold. Yeah. Or, you know, just Full Moon Video Zone and Empire Pictures, all that stuff was big at the time. Creatures. Yeah, I fell in love with all that stuff. So if I had to choose a genre, it would probably be horror.
That's awesome. Well, we can agree with you there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys,
One thing that you almost feel bad for the kids these days because like, they'll never experience that whole video store or video rental place Blockbuster sort of experience. Because like, you could spend hours in there just walking up and down the aisles.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. We just talked about this not long ago. It's like, a buddy of mine asked me of a record store we used to go to all the time back in the day. And I told him the name of it. He couldn't remember the name of it. And he was like, oh my God. Yeah. That was the name of the place. We used to spend forever in there. You know, we used to go in there, and back in the day, they used to have these thing called import records or CDs, and you'd cycle through the imports. It was the stuff you couldn't get. You know, you had to order it special. And it was the same with the video stores. You could walk in there and you knew the guy behind the counter or the girl, whoever, and you would talk about the new releases and rare stuff, depending on what video store you were in. They had a cult section. They had like all the good stuff. And, you actually had to rent a video and bring it home and watch it with the lights out and the surround sound. Now, I have kids now, and a lot of times it's like they're watch a movie, but like they got their phone on, and you know there's distractions, and you I don't know. It's too easy and quick now. Now you stream something, and if you don't like it 5 minutes in, you click out, you find something else. You know,
yeah, you didn't pay for it, so you don't.
Yeah,
it's a little. I think it's a little different now. So you're right. Yeah, you don't really care. You're just like, oh, what's on Netflix? Oh, this movie, what's this about? I don't know. You know, you watch 5-10 minutes of it, the lights are on, there's all the distractions. I don't know. It's lost a lot of that kind of vibe, that feel. Like something like The Exorcist or something like that today, I don't think people wouldn't have the attention span for it. It wouldn't be able to get made. It'd be too long.
That's
too boring.
That's one point I've made in some we were guests on the Wheel of Four podcast a little while ago, and he asked what our unpopular opinions are on movies. And I said, like, The Exorcist does not hold up anymore. It doesn't have the same effect that it would have had on people back then. Now, I think it's because we're desensitized to horror, and it's not like that type of horror it doesn't have that shock value anymore to it. Cause we've seen like way worse things now, but I think what you said,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
what you said makes sense too. Like, there's so many different distractions in our lives now. Like, for me to sit down and watch a movie without looking at my phone is almost an impossible task, which sucks.
Yeah. I know. I think a lot of times the only movies you end up really kind of watching all the way through beginning to end are like the classics you grew up with. Like, you could sit there and watch something because it's the nostalgia factor. Like you said, with the Exorcist thing, I mean, it's like it couldn't be made today, but Hollywood has kind of actually essentially been trying to remake that ever since. And at the same time, like every other movie is like The Exorcism of so-and-so or the mm-hmm. you know, they all have these names and they're kind of Exorcist like, but they don't really go full blown Exorcist. I mean,
yeah.
At the time there was nothing like that. I mean, you see the old video reels and the news reels of the people passing out and people walking out of there. And oh my God, it's a perfect setup. You know, the first half of the movie, it's about this little girl and the family, and you're engaged in the story. And then they pull the rug out, and the shit hits the fan, and you're just like, what? I couldn't imagine. I could not imagine have been a teenager or anybody in the theater back then when that movie came out. I couldn't imagine what the hell they were going through, because that just freaked everybody out. Psycho before that, you know? Mm-hmm. You just didn't see stuff like that. Now, like you said, we've all kind of seen it. You know, the news, I think, like some of the stuff you see on TV is worse than a lot of the stuff that you see in movies. It's really hard to grab somebody and shock them.
Definitely. And no one's going to the movie theaters anymore. And I mean, COVID has something to do with that, but I think even before COVID, no one goes to the movie theaters anymore. And like, people can't recreate that experience at home unless maybe like a shit ton of money to do it. But you know, you just don't have that same experience at home as a movie theater.
Yeah. And also, too, not everything needs to be made for the theaters, I think, now today.
Yeah.
Now it's like, even before COVID, like you said, even before COVID, a lot of the movies that they're making are either big budget animation ones or just explosions and car crash. I mean, if you're not like a teenager or a kid looking for like big explosions or nonstop action or stuff like that, the movie theater scene really isn't for you. There isn't really the big, I don't know. The movies are just different now. It's not that there's not a lot of variety. Every movie now has a box, like check boxes that they go down. They have a list of stuff that they have to put in order to appease certain people. And they're made more for other reasons, I think, other than, you know, making a good film. A lot of them, not all of them,
Yeah.
A lot of them are definitely like that. You can tell when you're watching it, like, okay, there's the character that they need to check this box, and there's the character that fits that, and it could be frustrating.
Speaking of box, you were in a short.
Nice segue.
Thanks. You're in a short called Box, I think 2019. And the one scene I like the bathroom scene in it. I thought you did a great job in it. And for most of the movie, you're like the only actor with little dialogue. Do you prefer doing those roles where you can like show your physical acting, or do you like more like the heavy dialogue driven acting?
I'm good, honestly, either way. Yeah. What turned me on, I'm glad you asked that, because what turned me on the most about this project was the fact that I was actually able to kind of do something a little different. I mean, since I've been started, I've done a lot of stuff that is, you know, I'm either the heavy or the main, like the sidekick to the heavy or somebody. I do a lot of nasty characters, even some stuff that's not even out yet. But it feels like I've done a lot of that stuff. I always get cast as like just, you know, they need the bad guy, they need a villain, they need a backwoods killer just somebody who's going to do the deed, you know, the bad stuff. So I go, yeah, I don't mind doing that, because those are all the characters, and some of the best actors I've loved coming up have always been character actors like that. Just Lance mm-hmm. Henriksen, William Forsythe, just these intense character actors. And I love all that stuff, but this actually gave me a chance to kind of do something almost like a 180. It's like my character isn't necessarily a bad character. He's not a bad guy. He just was put in a situation, and it's a little bit more artsy, and it's a little bit more of I was at a film festival and they announced it as a horror noir thriller, art house horror noir thriller. I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's a good way to describe it, because we just kind of put everything. It kind of checks a lot of, like I said, it checks a lot of things off, because we basically put everything into it. Mm-hmm. The favorite kind of genre is a film that we like. We kind of put into the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dig that. I like being able to do more emotion kind of type stuff. It was cool.
You kind of just answered one of my questions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. With that last sentence, cause I was going to ask, excuse me, in Box, like you start off as kind of a normal dude in the beginning, and then throughout the 30 minutes of the short film, you see yourself kind of descend into a state of madness. So I was going to ask you, like, what type of character would you prefer playing? Like the regular dude at the beginning where it's a little bit easier, or do you like having that, that kind of free for all to just do whatever the fuck you want on screen, 'cause you're kind of going a little crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing about playing villains, I think. Right. Like, some of the best villain. I mean, you don't have any moral code, or there's no map or blueprint that you have to follow. You could pretty much do whatever you want. You could be as big as you want, depending on the project. You don't really have any boundaries. You could, the hero and the good guy always has this code and of ethics and whatever and blah blah blah. But the villain, you're free. You know, you could be crazy. You could, I mean, as long as you don't, depending on the project, you don't want to be too loony. But, you know, like for this project, I tried to keep it grounded in somewhat of a reality as best I could, like especially at the end when, you know, the guy, you know, snaps. And again, it's open for interpretation, whoever watches it.
Yeah.
It's pretty ambiguous. And I've been at film festivals where we've had 100 people sitting and you come out and you get 100 different reactions and interpretations, which is always my favorite part of it. When people tell you about it, they're like, oh yeah, I saw the short and that was really cool. And it was like, they're either like, well, I thought this happened, or I thought this happened. And it's like, well, in a way everybody's kind of right, because we purposely did that, left it ambiguous. So people can kind of like, some stuff really happened, some stuff didn't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, the scene at the end in the mirror, that's a lot of people call back to that. And they mention that to me, and I dig that. It's always cool to be recognized for something you did, you know?
Yeah, of course. Because they're not like, you're not saying much. You're just doing it all like kind of physically with your face.
Yeah, that, and I wanted to break that mirror so bad. I really wanted that mirror to actually break. I headbutted that mirror so hard. I was like, can we break this fucking mirror already? I wanted to cut myself. I wanted to crawl in, you know. I wanted to just
Yeah.
Do all that stuff. I don't care. As long as the camera, as long as the camera's rolling, I don't give a shit. I'll do anything. I'll smash my face in the mirror. Yeah. I don't care. Whatever works. Yeah, that stuff's fun. I had a really good time on that one. I'm glad to, like I said, I'm glad to see it get the response that it's getting for something that we put together. And I mean, it was originally supposed to be a feature film. Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it originally started off, and we shot a lot. Actually, we shot about probably about an hour's worth of footage. But then, you know, with time and everything and money and everything, just kind of, we didn't want to force ourselves into making a feature film as opposed to, because a lot of, and how many times have you seen a movie where it's like, yeah, the movie was pretty good, but you say, eh, if it was just 20 minutes shorter, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Or if it was, you know, maybe it went on for like the first, like the half hour was a little too much or whatever like that. And we didn't want to do that. I wanted to, we just kind of brought it down to what its essentials were, because it's a fairly simple story.
You know? Yeah, it's always better to have the shorter but better quality. Like that's, it's going to keep everybody's attention for the entirety of the film.
Yeah, exactly. And we just found ourselves cutting stuff that, I mean, there was good scenes, but it's like, I guess any director or editor would have the same, has had to deal with the same thing millions of times. It's like, man, it's good stuff, but it was just like, you know, do we really need it? You know, does it fit into this? And it's pretty much a one man show too. I mean, if I was editing the film, I wouldn't be in it at all. I'd be like, I don't want to look at myself for an hour, let alone, you know, an hour and a half or whatever it is. So. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't look at my stuff anyway. I don't look at dailies. I don't look at anything. When the movie's done and released, I don't even look at it. I'll tell people, say, hey, here it is. Check it out if you dig it. Here's where you can watch it. But I can't watch my own stuff. I get asked that all the time. You watch your own movies? I'm like, there's times when you're at like film festivals and conventions and there'll be clips playing and stuff and you'll have to sit in for like a Q&A or something like that. But I can't watch. I don't know. It's weird. A lot of actors, a lot of actors don't watch their stuff. It's just weird. You know, you're just you up there, you know?
Yeah, that would be kind of weird, I guess, eh? I had a question for you. What, so you're a horror movie fan, obviously, we've established that. With the surge of horror remakes that have been coming out like the last decade to two decades, what remake would you want to be a part of that already hasn't been made?
Oh, there's been a few, man. Dawn of the Dead, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead comes to mind. And Alexandra Aja's Hills Have Eyes.
Nice. Yeah.
The first one, which I think I like actually probably better than the original. I can't say that about Dawn of the Dead because Dawn is just Dawn. I have a special place in my heart for the original Dawn. Mm-hmm. But Hills Have Eyes is a little bit more cultish. I mean, Dawn of the Dead is, I think, casts a wider net, so people are a little bit more attached to that one. Hills Have Eyes, I don't know. You could kind of, you know, you talk to people in a room, they're going to probably lean more toward Dawn than I think Hills, but so it's a little less sacrilegious, I guess, if you like the remake more than the original, because that was always my thing with remakes. I'm like, oh, they're fucking remaking that. The Fog, whatever, you know, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Dude, for a minute there, they were, like you said, the early 2000s, I remember. They were just, seems every time I turned around, some big studio was getting involved and just remaking these old movies. I'm like, why are they doing that? Why? And I said the same thing about Dawn of the Dead until I saw that trailer. They did like it was one of the first times I remember they did like, you know, the first 5 minutes of the film. And it was tied in with, I think, Monday Night Raw.
Oh, yeah. I think I do remember.
And Monday Night Raw is like, oh, tune in after like 11:05, and they're showing like the special clip of Dawn of the Dead. And I said, eh, whatever. And it was on because Raw was on. And they ended up showing like the intro, the whole thing, the town going nuts, the, you know, what's her name, falling out of the bathroom and climbing out of the window, running from her husband. And it was just insane. And it ended right when she hits the tree and right before the opening credits. And I was sold. I was hooked. I was like, I get it. This isn't just some lazy cash in. This is a whole other animal we're dealing with here. This is its own story, and it's, you know, the zombies are insane. They're fast. It still had a little bit of political stuff in there, which was cool if you're looking for that, because the original does too. It's satire. But I really dig the original Dawn. If I had to choose, I'd probably go with that one.
Yeah, I think
There's not too many of them.
I think if a remake's done properly, like what you said, like it's not a cash in, it's almost like they're paying homage to the original rather than just trying to make a buck off the name. I enjoy remakes. Like you said, The Hills Have Eyes. I love that remake. Even the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake from 2003. I enjoyed that. There is good ones, mm-hmm. but.
It's just for a while, it seemed like there was just so many of them that were just like, oh God, why is it? Yeah. You could just tell because there's no soul or anything into this, and it's not going to be gritty and dark. And the movies were made for a purpose back in the 70s. It was a very experimental time. And then to try to recapture that, even if you put like the grain on it in post and stuff like that, it doesn't matter. It has a different vibe to it than it did.
Exactly.
The original Chainsaw Massacre is one of those movies, and people talk about it like it's the bloodiest, most violent movie of all time. At the end of the day, I think it's pretty light.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, the original Chainsaw Massacre, it's pretty light on. It's just extremely well shot and extremely psychologically it gets in your head with the sound effects and the editing and just the look and feel of that movie. It looks like a documentary.
That movie's like,
looks like it actually happened.
Yeah, that movie's like the perfect example of the Mandela effect where like you remember something, but everybody kind of remembers.
Worse
yeah,
worse.
Everybody remembers this certain thing, but it actually mm-hmm. isn't true. Because like I love the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like one of my all-time favorite movies. And I always use the example, like every time I watch it, I feel like I have to have a shower just because I feel so dirty. Gross, yeah. But it's not because it's gory or anything like that. It's just like the whole setting and like knowing what the actors went through in order to get that that dinner shot. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. You hear that in documentaries too. You talk about you could just feel the raw nature of that. You could smell the old lampshades and the dust and the it's just burned into the celluloid of the fabric of that film. It's just, you can't recreate that. I don't care how much money you have, and they've tried and you can't do that. I think some of the best things, it's like, somebody once said, some of the best stories have been written on empty stomachs. You know what I mean? It makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. If you think about it, cause you try harder and you're a little bit more desperate. And a lot of those people were coming out of, you know, those early 70s projects reflected the times, you know, Vietnam, you know, post-Vietnam. It's all this crazy stuff that was going on. So, of course, that had to reflect on the silver screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of remakes, like a lot of American filmmakers, they try and remake like the foreign films, whether it be a Korean or like the French extremity films. It doesn't come out as good as the originals. What is it about like the foreign films that you think makes them so great, whether it be the acting or direction style?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact here for our viewing audiences, they're not loaded with people that are recognizable. They might be recognizable over there, but for here, it's like, they're not loaded with like big stars that people know. And a lot of times that takes a lot out of it too. If you watch a movie with, that was the problem I had with a lot of the remakes. It's like, well, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar's not going to die. You know what I mean? Or, you know, this WB star isn't going to be killed. So that takes away from the, you know, or if there's a kid, nothing can happen to the kid or this character. Back in the day, all bets were off. You know, there was no, it didn't matter. You didn't know who was going to make, not a living dead, you know, like, holy shit, everybody died. You know, it's like, you never know. You never really, there was really almost no rules, I guess. I don't know if a lot of that had to do with the censor board at the time, but mm-hmm. as far as I know exactly what you mean about the French extreme stuff. Like I recently saw, I tried to watch Inside, the remake of that.
Yeah.
And while I thought it was all right. I mean, they switched the ending and stuff, but if I hadn't seen the original, I thought it would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this wasn't bad. What really got me was the remake of Martyrs.
It's awful.
That drove me fucking insane. I'm sitting there watching they lit the girl on fire and she supposedly burned, and everything is burned except for her hair. The dress burned up. That's the hair would have been the first thing to go.
Yeah.
You torch somebody. But there's a skeleton with the dress and like slightly tattered and like a full head of hair. I'm like, you have to be fucking kidding me. I'm like, what was the point of that? Why take something that is known for being a little edgy and extreme? And even if you're only satisfying a certain audience, that hardcore audience, why remake that and make it like McDonald's or like Disney, like make it like accessible? It doesn't, not everything needs to be accessible. Everybody has to have their, people should have their thing. Like in high school, before a band became popular, there'd be that one kid in school, was probably me, wearing the t-shirts and listening to a band that nobody ever heard of. And then like a month later, all their stuff was, you know, they had a hit on the radio and then their stuff was everywhere. And it's like, it's not your band anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, can I have anything? Like, what are you doing? Now everybody likes them. You know, your friend's sister wants to borrow the record. Like, oh, okay. Just lost that.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, the French Extreme stuff's good, man. Yeah, those are the only two that I've seen. And I think they've done a few since then. But I don't get it. I get it kind of in a way. It's like, oh, made some noise. You know, let's remake it. You know, why not? It's going to happen.
Yeah, and like they just announced that they're remaking Train to Busan, which I don't know if you've seen that movie, but.
They're on my radar, that one, and they just did another one too. What is it, Peninsula or Talk?
Peninsula.
Yeah, the Peninsula was okay,
was
but
a sequel or something? Was that a direct sequel or was that just?
It was kind of a direct sequel, but not really. It's just they had the Train to Busan like in the title, but it really wasn't kind of connected that much.
It was like a spinoff, maybe, kind of like the Walking Dead type.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like a different part of the town or something like that or whatever.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I want to see that. I've been wanting to see that for a while, but you know, so much stuff and trying to fit it in with everything. It looked like a kick-ass zombie, but for the zombies have been just fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? There's several TV shows and there's movies. It's like, it's tough to sit there. And if I watch one, it's got to be really good.
I think
there's so much.
If you haven't watched Train to Busan, like you definitely need to watch it. Cause I have the same thoughts as you. Like I'm kind of sick of the whole zombie craze, but for one of our episodes, Brooke picked Train to Busan and I was like, oh fuck. All right. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Reluctantly watched it.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get around to it, especially cause I know exactly what you mean. And there's been people who tried to oversell things to me. You gotta watch this movie. You gotta watch this show. And I get turned off immediately. I'm like, no, I don't. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to? Yeah, it was pretty good. You might like it. Okay, I'll check it out. But yeah, I definitely want to check that one out. So that one's good, but the spinoff sequel was kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not that great, in my opinion. Yeah. Whenever you played the zombie, did you like go like full zombie character or like did you just kind of like have fun with it? Like how did you handle that?
It was crazy because when we I got booked on the Rockabilly Zombie and I was talking with somebody at Full Sail University. Somehow or another I got involved in meeting because you know you jump in and you meet people, you talk to other actors and then they tell you about projects. And I got involved in another project that was shooting at Full Sail during the day. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for zombies on that. And I said, oh, cool. I'll do that. So I was a zombie during the day in this Full Sail project. Yeah. And then at nighttime we were shooting Rockabilly at nights in Florida in the swamps. So day and night, I didn't sleep for like 3 weeks. I was literally a fucking zombie like all day and night on those two projects. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't really hard to do.
No.
Most of them were group shots for the Rockabilly. For Rockabilly Zombie Weekend, most of my stuff where I was featured, I was myself. I was a Rockabilly character guy.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of, I didn't really have to do much. We were just kind of talking and kind of hanging around. And then, but it was cool. It was cool getting the prosthetics and stuff like that. You're like, oh, look, this is cooler. I'm actually doing a, we're actually making a fucking movie here, man. This is cool. you know, because if you're a fan, there's nothing better than that.
Yeah.
You know, I could sit there and make up all day. And, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm working for Romero, which I would have loved to have done. You know, he died before I was able to get involved in anything. But it's, you know, you got to love it. You got to love what you're doing, because it's not easy to sit around, especially. I don't know if I could do it now. People ask me, oh, you know, you've done the extra stuff. I'm like, yeah, I can't do that anymore, man.
Yeah.
I got a lot of friends who actually live out here, and they do extra work constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll be on one project for like a week, and then they'll jump onto something else in the background. And I'm like, nah, I've done that. And you know, you're treated differently when you're an extra, and it's really not, I don't know. It's not for me. I have to have a character, and I have to come up with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, once you do that, even once, you either love it or you hate it. And I was just like, I want to, even when I was doing that project as the extra, I was looking at the principal actors the whole time. And I got to meet Jay LaRose and cool people like that on that set. And I'm watching them do their thing. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to have lines. I could do this. Yeah, I want to do that. Let's do that.
Yeah. The extra stuff is just like a good segue or a foot in the door to bigger and better things.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, you get different kinds. There's people who show up on set and they're just fans, and you know, they're walking around taking pictures, and you know, they want to talk to the main actors or something. And they all want to be seen. They all want to be on camera, and I get it. But you have to separate them from the people who are there. It's like, there's people who they do this for a living.
Yeah.
You know, they're constantly working on different projects, and they don't mind doing it. They'll hang around. And I get it. If you don't have kids or anything like that, or a family, I guess it'd be fun. You know, hang around, hang around in craft services, and oh, we're ready for you for the scene. They call you and you go in and do it. And I did that a couple times, but then you either stay with it or you just say, nah, this isn't for me.
You were a co-producer on the Kane Hodder story. Was that like a big thing for you? Like, was he a big inspiration of yours?
Oh yeah. I think Kane influenced everybody. Kane was like the first kind of, he was the first to be like all those horror, all the films. It was very rare that a stunt person would come out and be like, you know, be at the forefront of everything. So it was cool. He actually took the reins and, you know, was proud of the, like, I don't think anybody could remember the people who played the Jason character before him. Now it's easy because they're all doing conventions and stuff. But I think a lot of it has to do with because of Kane. He was the first one.
Yeah.
You know, he took the mantle, and he's the only one who's done more than, you know, one or two. He's done, how many was he in? Like five or six?
Yeah,
yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah, he started in 7, so yeah, he's been there for a minute. And he's been able to have a really good career because of that. So yeah, heck yeah. We did a project called One Night of Fear, which ended up having the same producers as the ones who produced the documentary, which I dug it. Did you all see the Kane Hodder documentary?
I haven't
yet. No,
The Hell and Back. Yeah, I think it's on. It's available everywhere now. I mean, I'm not sure about your. You guys have Tubi?
Yeah, we.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I know. I'm pretty sure it's on there now too. So if anything, watch it on there.
Okay.
It's a free app. Which Tubi's a great app, man. I talk about that constantly. People are like, oh yeah, Tubi. I'm like, the ads or whatever, but they have such a kick-ass selection
really
on there.
They
rare
do.
Stuff. Their horror selection rivals like Netflix and Shudder and shit. I'm like, man, they got some really good stuff on here.
They have all the like trauma shit.
Yeah, they do have a lot
there.
Of stuff.
I love it.
Yeah, Trauma. They got Full Moon Video is on there. They got the Shout Factory channel. There's a lot of cool shit on there. And it's a free fucking app, you know? That's cool. The ads I'll never get over, though. I hate it. Some of the worst moments of my life is when I'm sitting there watching something on YouTube. I just want to watch them. An interview or a clip or a music video or something, you know, and I got to sit there and I got to watch this ad for like a minute or two and you can't skip it.
Yeah.
Those are the fucking worst. I'm like, who is this benefiting? There are people who are just literally sitting there groaning, or they leave the room, or they can't wait to hit skip. You know, they got like the 10 second clock. They're just waiting to hit one so they can skip your stupid ad. I don't know who benefits from that, but I mean, it's funny because that's how Box makes its revenue. We have those ads on there.
It's funny you say that because I was just going to use that as an example. You know, I was watching Box earlier today just to get a refresher on it before we talk to you. And
and it gets to a pivotal scene and it cuts to...
I, At least these ads, ads were trailers for new movies on Shudder, so I couldn't complain too much. But yeah, sometimes they're pretty rough.
Oh well, that's okay. Well, that's good. You guys had a better experience. And I did a podcast recently, and the guy was telling me, he's like, "Yeah, I watched Box. I was almost going to send him a private link. I was going to either send him a Blu-ray or like a private link where there's, you know, a link to my own, like a private thing. So there'd be no ads because it's only 30 minutes. And to have ads cut in there, it's like, he's like, I'm in the middle of this pivotal scene. This is a while ago during the election. And he's like, during the campaign. And he's like, I'm in the middle of this scene. It's like, it's really intense. It's like this really cool shot where it's like a long take between you. And then it's like panning over to the box. And then it's really intense and I'm loving it. And then all of a sudden, right in the middle of it, it cuts to, "Hi, I'm John Ossoff, and I want to tell you about the fucking..." I'm like, oh my God, you got to be fucking kidding me. Remember, like, during the election campaign, those ads are everywhere. You can't escape them. I was like, man. I was like, Ossoff, I don't care. I don't give a shit if you're running. I don't care who you are. I hate you.
That's awesome.
That's great.
So at least you guys got some cool trailers in between the breaks instead of, you know... That just takes you out of it. It just takes you out of it. You're into a movie, especially a scene like that, and you're just like, guy pops up and he's running. I don't give a fuck. Shut up.
Yeah. How has like the auditioning process changed during COVID? Like, can you still go in and do like in-person auditions, or is it like all like over Zoom and stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, well, since this has been going on, it's all been pretty much remote. I've auditioned for stuff. It's all been pretty much tapes or like a live stream. Like sometimes you'll get somebody they want you to send in a tape, and then other times you'll get a casting director they want to talk to you live via Zoom or something like that. Which is there's good and bad. I think I miss going into a room and having that connection. There's a connection you can get. In a room, when you walk into a room, I don't know, you have a presence about yourself and you can read people and they could read you more. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more of a personal connection, I think, than you can only get so much from a tape. You know, you look at a tape and you might like somebody, because I've been in that room too, where I've had to read people and you're like, oh, you know, I might like this person's good. They might be good, but you're only working with what they sent you. You can't, you know, as to when you're flashback to when you're in the room with people, if you do a take and if it's not what they are particularly looking for, but they like you, they could give you another shot and they say, well, that was good, but try it like this. And they could critique you and direct you and all the things that they're going to do on set anyway. I think it takes a lot of chances away from, I think, a lot of people, but at the same time, there's positives. I mean, I've been on set and I've been able to audition for stuff. I just set up my lighting. I got a lighting rig and I got, you know, the tripod and everything. And I could be in a hotel and I could get an email at 3 a.m. or whatever it is. And they could say, oh, we have an audition. You know, can you send us a tape by tomorrow or whatever? And I could do it right there in the hotel as opposed to driving to a location somewhere back in the day, or even just, you know, less than a year ago, I'd have to drive to a location and go in and see all, you know, you see all the other actors in there and they're all nervous. And, you know, so there's positives and negatives, I think, about both. But yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It's definitely changed, though, for sure.
Oh, definitely. I can imagine.
Sometimes you get lucky, though. Sometimes I think the coolest thing is when somebody just kind of reaches out to you and they're like, yeah, you know, I saw this project or I was at a film festival and I'd really like to have you read for this role, or my last 2-3 projects have been like that. They've somebody had saw a box and they wanted me to know if I was interested in the role that they were casting, and I took a look at it and I ended up signing on, and I said, yeah. So, I mean, that's cool too. The more stuff you do, the more people see, and it gets a little bit easier as far as the casting process goes. But lately I've been doing a lot of TV auditions here in Atlanta. I must have read for every show out there, Cobra Kai, you name it. I've read for it. So, I mean, the opportunity is good. It's always good to have those opportunities.
Yeah, it seems like TV is really kind of going to the forefront of like the film industry right now, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because that's where everybody's pretty much on Netflix. There's so many. Every time I turn around, there's a new streaming platform. Fucking Peacock, you know.
Yeah.
Netflix, Hulu. We were talking about Tubi a minute ago. I mean, that's where everybody's watching their stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like Netflix or Cobra Kai. Before that, it was YouTube Red. That's where I found it. And then apparently, as big as I thought the show was on YouTube Red, apparently it wasn't as big as it got because now everybody's talking about it. Once it hit Netflix, it was like this like hidden gem to people. Oh, have you seen Cobra Kai? I'm like, yeah, dude, I've been watching it for 2 years. Where were you like 2 years ago when the show dropped on YouTube Red? It's like, I saw the trailer. I was like, yeah, I could watch that. So we signed up, did the program.
Yeah, we didn't start watching.
Of course, once the show ends, everybody cancels it.
Yeah.
We didn't start watching Cobra Kai till it was on Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I think happened a lot, because I think everybody and their brother has Netflix. So I think once it hit Netflix, that was it. It just pretty much blew up and became, I think it's like the number one show now.
Yeah, it definitely was at one point.
Even past, I think, Walking Dead and Stranger Things. Yeah, with that new season dropped and everybody just binge watched. That would have been cool. That would have been neat to do. For people who didn't watch the show before, they got to binge watch the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Before the third season dropped. That must have been cool.
That's what happened with me. Like, I was so invested in the first two seasons, I fired them off in like a week to 2 weeks, and then I had to sit and wait for I only had to wait for like a couple months, but I couldn't imagine waiting for like, I think it was like a year. Yeah.
A year or whatever. Yeah, there was a big break in between season one and two. And it's cool because they always end on such a big cliffhanger. Every season ends with, oh, who's coming in now? You know? And yeah, that was insane when Kreese comes in at the end of the second season. Or I should say the first season. You had to wait. I'm like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. We had to wait like a year or whatever for the next one to drop. But people who binged it, they had it made because they had everything right there. And they could just, oh, what's going to happen? They just, okay, I'll just click on to the next season. It's right there. So, yeah. There's a lot of it's like that, though. There's a whole generation out there who don't know anything about watching a show, and then it ends on a cliffhanger, and then you got to wait till next week, next Sunday, next Monday, or whatever. Like most shows, when we were coming up, it was like the big, like Monday Night Raw. We talked about that earlier. If Raw went off the air at like 11 o'clock or whatever it was, and you're sitting there holding, like, oh my God, I got to wait till next Monday now, or the pay-per-view, or whatever the hell it was. And if you didn't, like, there was no. Now you can pretty much access anything now. But back in the day, if you missed it, if your buddy didn't tape it or something, you were fucked. You couldn't watch it. You couldn't just pull up. There was no YouTube. You couldn't pull up clips even. You know what I mean? You just had to take so-and-so's word for it. Or a big cliffhanger on a big show. Like, any show. Now it's just now, right now, next. You know, you can pretty much have anything. It's instant gratification.
Is there any movies that are going to be coming out in the next couple of years that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, we actually just wrapped a film called The Fury, which I think last time I actually found out, let me double check, man. I think they got a name change. Yeah, it's a kick-ass action horror, actually more like an action thriller. It's kind of like a gritty throwback to the action thrillers of the 70s and 80s. So, yeah, let me pull it up now. Actually, I just did reshoots actually in Colorado like less than a month ago. It was really cool.
Yeah, I'm still seeing it as.
And then they were talking about how they might do a change. Yeah, the Fury.
It's still coming up on IMDb as The Fury.
Yeah, it'll probably be that way until. I think it's going to be called The Shadow of Death now.
Which is I like that name.
I like that.
That is a cool.
Yeah,
name,
it's The Shadow of Death. I like that. Yeah, it actually went through a few name changes. People got confused because it was when I joined the project in 2018, it was Fury of the Dragon. And I was like, I think that's a Bruce Lee movie, isn't it? And people were like, I think it's something like that. And then they shortened it to The Fury, which was cool. But then I think there's another, matter of fact, I know there's an early 80s movie called The Fury. I don't know if that would have been an issue or not, but you know. You want to be as original as you can. So I like that name. If that's a name that they go with, that could be marketing. It could be a producer. It could be whatever it is, whatever the decision is. that's been in the works for a while. But it's a really, 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 really kick-ass flick. Really violent and gritty. And
I'm excited to watch it.
Horror fans will probably dig it, too. Some good practicals in there.
I like anything with gore.
Nice. I'm excited to check it out when it drops.
Yeah, anything with practical gore. There's not a lot of CGI in there. We did a lot of we got bloody on that one.
Nice.
We got real messy on that one. Yeah, that'll probably be out, I'm assuming, soon. I know that they just wrapped up some more pickups and some reshoots, but that should be out, I want to say, sometime this year.
Awesome.
I know, obviously, they were looking for theatrical, but I think now that's probably not going to be the case now, I think, for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So it'll be streaming somewhere, I'm sure.
Be like VOD or something. You can rent it somewhere.
Yeah. Killer Babes and the Frightening Film Fiasco. Oh, my God. Did you guys check that out?
That is quite the name.
That's got to talk about names, right? That's like, you know exactly what you're getting with that name. That's a kick-ass name. Yeah. It puts you in mind of like Sorority Babes and the Slime Ball Bowl-O-Rama.
Yeah.
Which is actually interesting because Linnea Quigley is in there as well. She stars in there. It's got a whole slew of really, really great talent in that project. That was been put on the back burner too because of the COVID. So,
yeah, I'm on the IMDb for it right now. I see her and I see Jenna Connell from Terrifier.
Jenna Connell's in there. Tiffany Shepis. There's a whole Lisa Wilcox, you know, everybody's favorite ass kicker, Dream Warrior. Alice, she's really
Emma
cool.
Ballot.
Brett Mullen directing. I mean, Bellamy Ass Strangers, Pray at Night.
That should be a fun one.
Yeah, it's a very ambitious project. And I wish it all the best. I hope it all comes out. I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's definitely an ambitious project. But so far, so good. And then that'll be, you know, whenever that is. And let's see, I got... Yeah, I think that's it as far as projects that are going in now. And I actually just signed on to do a project called Tin Roof, which is going to be, it was written by Rob Mello from Happy Death Day.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, that's going to be cool too. That's like a cabin in the woods kind of horror thriller slasher type thing.
Yeah, I think you've posted.
And that starts later on this year.
You posted the cover art for that on Instagram not too long ago. Kind of had me.
I think they have like I shared a link to the page. Well, there's no link. It's just like the mock setup that they have. Cause it's still in the early stages. They got like a little mock-up artwork for the Facebook page.
That's cool.
But yeah, we start that. That's scheduled to start later this year.
Awesome.
So yeah, I mean, you know, things are chugging along, man. You know, a little bit better this year, hopefully, than it was last year, but
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, it's crazy. The convention scene too, I'm looking to get back into that. Like I said, a lot of things got moved around. I love doing the conventions.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be a fun time. Like you get to meet everybody obviously everybody that goes there, but like if you talk to people on social media or anything like that, you get the opportunity to meet them in real life. I don't know. Like it's gotta be a surreal experience.
Yeah, it's cool. I dig it. It's actually, it's kind of in a weird way. Because I've been to the conventions before I even started doing any of this shit. You know, I was just like, we'd go to the conventions and we'd get our tickets and you want to meet people and you talk to other fans because one cool thing about the horror genre is it's extremely loyal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's a very loyal fan base. I mean, you could lose them, you could piss them off, but you know, there's a reason why they don't have, you know, comedy conventions or rom-com conventions or, you know, it's all kind of basically narrowed down to that horror sci-fi, you know, kind of thing. And they, if you give them good stuff, they'll come out, they'll be there.
That's very true. That's a good point that you made. Like you could piss people off with one movie that you make, but then you come out and you hit a banger and they're still going to come around. Like they're still going to check out everything that you do.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They'll, complain and bitch and moan about a trailer or something for like six. That's another problem I have too, though, with the trailers and the people don't wait for the movie to come out. They just lose their shit over a teaser or a trailer. <It's> like, a buddy of mine sent me a trailer for a project recently, and I looked at it and I noticed the comments were turned off. I'm like, yeah, gee, I wonder what happened here. Cause, it doesn't matter what people are going to have their opinions. And it's like, wow, how could you have an opinion on a something you didn't even see yet? You know, it's like
a 30-second clip.
And that goes back to like we talked about earlier with the remakes. I mean, I was kind of guilty of that years ago. Like when I first heard about, I just heard about it. When I just heard they were remaking Dawn of the Dead, I lost my mind. And I'm sure I'm not alone. There's millions of other fans out there. They're like, are you fucking kidding me? What are they doing? You know, it's like pissing in the Holy Grail or something. It's like, you can't do that. You can't remake this. What's the matter with you? But, you know, like I said, then I saw that clip and I was sold. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the trailer now, like the little teaser clips and the trailers, people lose their minds, you know, dislike, thumbs down, they leave like a 3-page long comment. You know, this is bullshit. Like, a lot of the movie reviews are like that too. Movie reviews aren't even reviews anymore. They're just like, how come you didn't make the movie I wanted?
That's fair.
Your movie sucks.
Yeah.
There's very few reviewers and podcast. I'm friends with a lot of them, but there's very few that actually break it down and actually give it, you know, proper critiques and actually talk about the film. Well, I don't really care for this. Why? Well, here's why. As opposed to just somebody randomly hate bombing something. And you're going to get that. People are going to leave stupid comments and, you know, you know, if that's what they got to do, if that's what gets them through their day, they care enough to, you know, go crazy over something like that, then hey, whatever. I think it's fun. It's still funny.
Yeah. No matter what you do, there's going to be haters.
Yeah, and I find with a lot of trailers these days, like, they show a lot of the movie.
What's that? They show
For trailers these days, I find that they show a lot of the movie, like, in the trailer. So I kind of stay away from trailers these days. Because they kind of, show all the good parts.
Then they have the, I don't know when. I don't know how far back, but back when it used to be, they'd have like a teaser trailer. Like, for example, the one I remember that sticks out in my mind is the one for Independence Day. You know, they would just the original Independence Day. They just showed like the clouds breaking, and there was like the spaceship coming through, and like people like, oh, and it was like Independence Day, 1995 or 96 or whatever it was, and you were just like, that got everybody talking. Then you cut to, I don't know, a few months later, and then the full trailer comes out, and it's just showing the White House. They're showing all the money shots. You know, they're showing the White House getting blown up. They're showing everything going on, the big scale of everything. And then by the time you go see the movie, you're almost waiting for that stuff to happen, as opposed to you feel like you've seen the movie already. And they've been doing that in trailers for years. They've done mini documentaries. I've seen a bunch of stuff on YouTube. People have talked about that exact same thing. It's like the trailers ruin everything. It's like now they have some things where you can watch like the first 10 minutes or something of a project of a movie. I think they started that with Spider-Man back when. They had like a special link, you know, you watch the first 10 minutes. It's like, what? What's that going to do? I don't know. You want to see the whole thing? Yeah, I don't know. Don't show anything in the trailer. Show just what you need to. Get people talking, you know, that's the whole point.
That's one thing I hate most about trailers, like for horror movies, is they show all the scares in the trailer. So then you go and watch it and it completely loses that effect on you.
Yeah. 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 I can't sit. Like you said, I try to avoid them trailers and everything as much as I can. Unless I, like I said earlier, like Ari Aster or somebody like that. If I really dig what they're doing, I don't really even need to see a trailer. I think he's to the point for me now where I could just hear about some directors are like that. You know, James Wan, you could, so-and-so's got a new project coming up. I'm in, I'm sold. I don't need to see any trailers because it's more than likely, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, it's very true.
As hard as it is not to see ads and trailers or everybody, you know, if you're on your phone, if you're on YouTube, you see an ad for something. If you're scrolling through your phone or on Instagram, there's trailers and posters, and you know, there's it's really hard to avoid. It's kind of like when people would say, "Oh, I didn't see Walking Dead last night, so no spoilers, please." Like on Facebook back in the day, it's like it's kind of hard. You don't watch the show, but if, God forbid, you went on Facebook for a minute to say hi to somebody, and people are talking about, "Holy shit, they killed Glenn! They beat the shit out of him with a ball bat and all this," and people losing their minds. It was like, "Oh, spoiler alert!" You know what I mean? Like people lost their shit over that, and it's true. It's like you got to avoid all forms of media and contact of any kind if you haven't seen the show, because the world will be talking about it and giving spoilers.
That's very true. I don't think I have any more questions. Brooke, do you have any more that you want to ask? Or
no, I don't have any more. I think it's been a good conversation.
Definitely.
Yeah, man, I love chatting with you guys. This is a perfect setup. I like going back and forth and talking about other things. Like I said, I mean, I'm not one to come on and talk about, if I got something coming up, I'll talk about it quickly, but I'm not one to pimp out my stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just dig chatting, especially now with everybody some people are locked down, and I'm not. Yeah. I think one of the only cool things about the movie theater situation was, I'm not sure how it was there, but over here, once they opened back up, they were showing all old movies.
Yep, same here.
They had like over the holidays, they had like Gremlins and Die Hard, and
yeah, awesome. There's nothing else to show, really.
Yeah, they what did they have? They had I went and saw Unhinged with Russell Crowe. I thought that was cool. That was a cool kind of thriller. Yeah, and then like Monster Hunter. There's been a couple of movies, but nothing really, you know.
I think they did The Witches.
No.
At least, because it's like, was that Witch? Did they do that, or was that like an HBO?
That might have just been VOD. I'm not sure, but I remember seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that getting a theater. That seemed like more like it. Was that Disney or HBO? Yeah. One of those? That's the thing. HBO Max, there's all these. Disney Plus, like there's so many. I mean, if you got a project, there's a pretty good chance it can get some form of distribution, because there's no shortage of Amazon Prime. There's no shortage of places to put
exactly.
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
As much as I used to love going, I'm sure you guys agree. As much as I used to love going to the movie theaters, I just don't know if it's, you know, it might not be. I don't know, man. It might not be that way anymore because of all the platforms. Everybody's just kind of, I can just watch it at home, you know. Like when they do that thing where they release it in the theater and then on VOD on the same day, that's a tough one, because it's like, what are you going to do? Just the COVID thing. You talk to people that are like, well, I'm too scared to go out. I don't want to go to the movies, or I'm going to watch it at home. There's a lot of people who are like that, or they physically can't. Like you said, you got to stay in your house or whatever. That sucks.
But at least you
got VOD. You can still see it.
There's another podcast that we're pretty close to, the Horror Movie Crew podcast. And they brought up the point, like, do you actually miss going to the movies, or do you miss just having the opportunity to be able to? And like, I thought that was like a really good point to bring up, because I mean, I personally love the movie theater experience. I think some movies are better in the theater, but at the same time, like if you can watch a movie from the comfort of your home, like, I mean, it's not as big of a deal anymore as it used to be.
Yeah. No, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It used to be an event. Like Anthony Mackie, what's his name, said, it used to be like a big experience. It was an event. You'd go and, you know, you'd get the popcorn, whatever, you'd bring your friends, and you'd go see it on the big screen, you know, big, loud. Some movies are just made for theaters. Like Die Hard, I couldn't imagine seeing Die Hard. Like, I saw that as a kid in the theater, and it just blew me away. I was like, yes, some movies are just made for that. And I mean, even if you got a good set, like we got a pretty good setup at the house. They got the projector and we got the surround and all that. But I don't know. It's somewhere along the line too, though. I think about some of the people who, I think about some of the recent experiences we've had in movies where you get the people, you know, there's a whole generation out there now that they're talking through the whole thing, or they're taking pictures of the screen, you know, putting it up on social media. Hey, we're totally at the movies watching this movie right now. It's like, no, you're not. You're not watching shit, dude. There's a reason why they tell you to turn those fucking things off at the beginning of the movie. Like, what the hell are you doing? You just paid 80 bucks, and if it's in 3D, you know, you got kids, you just paid $100.
Well, that's another thing too.
Or it's families aren't really the issue. It's the fucking the movie going audience now has changed.
Yeah.
Completely. They're used to being at home. They think they're at home watching Netflix.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, they're used to just doing that and they could, you know, laugh and ha, but no, you're in a public fucking theater where people want to watch the movie. People are talking, they actually want to hear what they're saying.
Where you spend $100 to go and then you end up hating the movie.
Yeah, that's worse too. That's bad. You know, because money's tight for everybody now. And, you know, hopefully the movie's good.
All right, man. Is there anything else that you want to bring up or talk about before we sign off for the afternoon?
Nah, man, that ought to do it. Whatever we didn't pick up, we'll pick up on the next one.
It works for us.
Cool. Sounds like a good plan, man.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, I dig chatting with you guys. I got to get my ass out to Canada again, too. Hopefully there's a... Oh, God, it's been forever. Hopefully there's like a convention or even a gig or something. And y'all shoot a lot of stuff out there, too.
Yeah, that's true. Canada has kind of started making a bit more of a name for itself in the locations and stuff like that.
A lot of movies and shows I'm seeing, I'm like, oh, Toronto, Ontario. Toronto, Ontario, they got a soundstage out there. I'm like, man, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, even just to go out and visit, because like I said, I tell everybody, it's like, oh, you went to Toronto, how is it? I'm like, I tell everybody, I've been to New York, I've been to Toronto. I tell everybody, it's like, Toronto's beautiful. It's a beautiful city. It's like New York, only cleaner.
That's very true.
And it was cold as hell. It really was, but I'm used to that. You know, Detroit, New York, I've lived in all these cities, and cold don't bother me.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love it. I got to get out there. Got to get out there again.
Well, if you ever come around, let us know. Maybe we can link up and figure something out.
Yeah, hell yeah. Absolutely. Definitely. I'm sure there's something going on out there this year or next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Or whenever down the line, we'll put something together.
Sounds like a plan.
Cool deal.
Thanks for hopping on. We appreciate your time.
Good chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Appreciate that.